They arrested me and they put me in jail and they called my pappy to throw my bail. And he said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that
hot rod Lincoln. That's correct, and good afternoon and happy new year, everybody. Welcome back to the Five to Go podcast. We've been saving 2 months up of this NASCAR offseason to finally come back and spit some verbs at you, if you will, as maybe Jared Yamamoto, your handsome producer, yes, Eric Von Hessler, would
some
say.
Some verbiage.
That's some verbiage, yeah. So we are back. The whole gang is here. Doug Fireball Turnbull, traffic reporter on WSU Radio here in Atlanta. And once or twice a year, I get to mess around with the PRN gang and go around. We'll be at Atlanta Motor Speedway this year. I'll be with them and at the new Charlotte Roval. We'll talk more about that. I'll get to be a turn announcer there. So that's my NASCAR credentials. Eric Von Hessler, weekday host of the Von Hessler Doctrine here at WSB and longtime NASCAR observer. How you doing?
Yeah, just a fan. No credentials here. Just been going to racing since I was seven.
He just watched Jeff Bodine before he was ever at NASCAR. That's pretty
good.
That's correct. And then, so, no, do we even need to say the credentials? Remember the famous Elliott Racing family, longtime luminary in the sport, Dawsonville, Dan Elliott, how you doing?
Doing good. How are y'all doing?
Great. Happy New Year.
Doing
Happy
great.
Happy New Year. Happy Daytona. Happy Valentine. We're getting ready for it all.
I think it's 22 or 21 days until the Daytona 500 on February 18th. Atlanta Motor Speedway comes right into our market the very next weekend after that. So just like that, the season is here. The Rolex 24 is this weekend. All the sports cars will be revving up down Daytona Beachway, and some NASCAR drivers will be involved in that. And we've just got.
Do you have your long johns ready for Atlanta?
I'm hoping we don't. Yeah. I'm hoping if it's weather like we had this week, we'll be fine. 50s,
exactly.
30s. You know that we could survive being in the 50s, yeah, and having sunshine.
Hopefully, it won't be driving on ice.
Oh gosh, yep. Yeah, that's just as likely though. Especially with what we've had here in Atlanta this winter. Hope you guys both had a great week. Since we've been off. We crowned the champion Truex, but since then there's been Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, all the resolutions. We're already almost a month deep into 2018.
So happy everything to everybody.
Right, and Kwanzaa and all of that.
Yeah,
so,
of
you know, we can't forget that, MLK Day. So, look, we run it down. Here's how this works in this podcast you're listening for the first time. Pretty much, we don't give you just every NASCAR news story and analyze it. We pick five things, whether it's overarching subjects in the sport or just certain stories that stuck out to us, and we break it down with Von Hessler's credentials, mine, and, of course, Dan Elliott's, and we've just gotten done with the NASCAR media tour that usually takes place in Charlotte in the last week of January. I've been on that media tour a couple of times, but haven't gone the last couple of years because, frankly, the station doesn't pay me to go.
Yeah.
Well, you got to pay my own way to go. You know,
let me ask them, didn't they used to move around, but now they just kind of stay in one place, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So they used to take the whole media on tour buses. They go from shop to shop. You meet with the teams, and the teams do their own presentations. Now, at the Charlotte Convention Center, which is adjacent to the NASCAR Hall of Fame, they just bring everybody in the same place, divvied up. Okay, it's time for Gibbs' press conference. And then they have breakaway one-on-ones of the drivers. And there's like a radio row, and the TVs, you know, the TV properties get to do whatever they want with them. So that's kind of how that goes.
Is it well-attended? Do they get a lot of media interest?
They get really the same travel band that goes with them each year, plus the local affiliates do some stuff. But it's not as exciting. In 2013, when I went for the first time, and I went with Captain Herb, which was awesome because you know the next year I didn't go with him, and a couple months later he passed away. So having that time with him was great. But when I went with him, we still went. I think we went to Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports, but we just went in their conference areas. We didn't go in the shop.
Yeah,
went to Penske and the Ford Racing Institution, whatever. And it's just different now. They just don't do very many remote boat stuff. They did something at Charlotte Motor Speedway. I think that was it, and that was pretty fun. But coming out of the media tour, you hear all the drivers use the drinking word excitement. That's usually what you hear. Everybody, we already know who's going to be where. But there've been some loose ends so forth, including where Danica Patrick is going to end up. That news did not surface until this week. We found out last week GoDaddy's coming with her. She knew she was going to have a ride, and she'll have that in the Indy 500 as well. We didn't know who the heck she was going to drive for because the Ganassi door had closed. And before I get to that, I want to ask Dan, did the media tour exist during the Elliott family days at all, and did they ever come down to Dawsonville?
No, it didn't exist at that time. And you know, the sad part about the media tour now is the fact that you only get the drivers. You don't get the owners or the crew chiefs or
well, they put the owners and crew chiefs in there. They do.
But you still don't get as many as you did before. And it's kind of sad the way it's turning out, but can't change that.
Yeah.
It's pretty sanitized for sure. It's a very controlled environment, but I know from the times that I went, I would go, and the time that I would get to spend with the drivers then that kind of set the tone for the whole season, gave me all sorts of material for the rest of the year when I was doing PA at Gresham or Charlotte or Atlanta.
You get stories.
You get things, and since I'm not on the tour each week, I think for those that cover it each week, they're like, okay, it's just another race weekend almost, you know, three days. And it's just a little different, but it's certainly that's really to be the start of the season, because after we're just a couple weeks of Daytona. And so I wanted to talk about Danica Patrick, because that was maybe the biggest silly season news that surfaced. She will have arrived for the Daytona 500. Pretty much at the end of last season, Premium Motorsports bought what was left of Tommy Baldwin Racing, which had scaled to a part-time team. They have a charter, and they're going to field the number 7 Chevrolet in the Daytona 500.
It's still called Tommy Baldwin Racing?
Well, I think it will be in this instance, okay. But it's really – it's owned by Premium Motorsports. We had the 15 and the 55 car last season, the backmarker team. Mm-hmm. But Tommy Baldwin Racing is going to have it. And Tony Urie Jr. was going to be her crew chief, and he worked with her in the Xfinity Series. So that's going to be very interesting to see. So she has a ride now. And I'd just like to kick this to y'all. I'll go to you, Eric, first. We knew Danica – we knew when we did our last show that Danica had already said she's not – going to continue as a full-time driver, and this is going to be her last deal. Well, we've already talked about, I guess, about her legacy, but what do you think about this pairing and just the fact that she was able to get GoDaddy again, the significance of it all?
I have always thought that it would be smart for her to do the Daytona 500 and the Indy 500. Now, she's not going full-time in the Indy series either.
Indy 500 should be, unless all things being equal, it should be her last race.
Okay, she's only going to do it once.
She said that, yeah.
I felt like she would have been smarter to dabble in NASCAR. She had something going in Indy. I know that that's not as high profile, but she had won a race over there, which means there was a possibility she could have won another race over there.
Yeah.
And the Daytona 500, we all know that backmarker cars can get close to winning and maybe win. And she was in, and if she had done it for a few years, she probably could have had an alliance with a Stuart Haas or something, gotten into some better equipment. I always thought that she would have had a better legacy if she would have stayed in Indy and then jumped into a NASCAR race here and there, maybe a road race here or there, and the restrictor plate races, because we know how bunched up the cars are together and there's a good chance of getting a top 10 and doing more for your legacy. I never thought it was a smart idea for her to become a full-time NASCAR driver. So I think she's only doing it for one season, I guess, but I think this is what she should have been doing all along.
And she will have support, bolstered support. She wouldn't have gone to do this without a chance to win, let's be real. Mm-hmm. She's not just, she didn't go to BK Racing with no affiliation. They're going to have Richard Childress affiliation, Earnhardt Childress Motors, and Childress Pit Crews. So that's the
caveat. Qualify well and probably start in a pretty decent position.
Why do you think, before I get to Dan's take on it, why do you think that she should have just been part-time? Do you think just because the odds were stacked against her to be successful?
I just feel like that she was look, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of disappointments in Danica's career. She's the best female driver of all time, there's no doubt, because she won an Indy race.
Yeah.
So I just feel like she had something going over there, and she understood those cars. And to come over and try to do what she did, I just thought it was a heavy lift. It's very difficult in NASCAR. I know Tony Stewart made the switch a long time ago, but we've seen a lot of guys come from Formula One, come from Indy, and just not be able to figure out the NASCAR situation. But
while Pablo Montoya won two races, Dario Franchitti
couldn't get anything going. This guy's won how many? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he went right back to Indy and won again.
So I thought for her legacy, she had a chance to win a couple more races over there. Always being in the Indy 500 means, didn't she come in third in the Indy 500 one year?
Very early
I just
on,
feel
yeah.
like that's where she was. And then, jump into a road course, jump into a restrictor plate race where you got a chance of placing top 10.
Interesting take, and a lot of people said just stick to one or the other, but do a little bit of both. I like that. So, Dan, what do you think?
I think let's go beyond Daytona and Indy. Did they say anything much, or have you heard anything much about her career and what her career will be after Daytona and Indy?
And I think
she's a fitness
winery.
Certainly, she could jump in the booth, right? If she wanted to,
I don't think she has an interest.
I hadn't heard anything about anything else other than the two races this coming year. So I was curious as to beyond that, what's in Danica's future, and what are we going to look to see out of her in the next 5 years to come.
I think she's got a fitness guru thing going on with the yoga. Yeah. So I think that's where she's going to make her money. Yeah.
Yeah, she's got book. She's got a clothing line, wine. She has said that she's planned forward to be, you know, more business affiliate.
Most of the stories
affiliated.
You see about her now is that she's dating Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
That's most of the stories
yeah,
you
which,
see.
Yeah, which, for those who didn't know, Ricky Stenhouse showed up to the banquet. He was one of the, you know, top playoff drivers, showed up to the banquet, didn't have Danica with him. People started going, what's up with that? And then they announced their breakup, and then right after that, she was seen in public with Aaron Rodgers. So, and it was funny because at the 2013 media tour, the first I went on, that was the media tour where they announced, hey, you know, right at the end of the tour, they said, hey, we're together. And she had just gotten divorced. You know, so I'm like, gosh, that's, you know, fast driver. She rebounds fast, too.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, you know, but
you
also,
know,
the thing
is, business,
it's
none
of our business, but
yeah.
Hey, we talk here all the time about how can NASCAR get more into the pop culture, get more, you know, whether we like it or not, the fact that she's dating Aaron Rodgers is going to get a lot more stories than really Tommy Baldwin Racing.
And it was interesting.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it really, that's true. I hope that Aaron Rodgers shows at the Daytona 500.
That would
be cool.
That
would be great for the sport. Yeah. And a lot of celebrities do, so that it would be even better if she was doing Atlanta and he showed up there. But a lot of celebrities show up at the 500, so maybe he'd be overshadowed. But Danica's legacy complicated, and I don't think anybody could say that in NASCAR, except for the idea of it inspired young women to know, hey, I could get in a stock car one day. Could we measure it as a success? She did win the 2013 pole for the 500 and finished at the top 10, was leading with like 8 to go. I was in the media center in Daytona with that. That was exciting, let me tell you. And it didn't pan out that way.
The question is whether the fact that she's the first female driver to do what she's done in Indy and in NASCAR, have a ride like that to, you know, a lot of male drivers have the same kind. I don't know. Where would I put her? I don't know. Jeff Green?
Yeah.
Although he certainly had a good, what we call now the Xfinity. Yeah. He had a good Xfinity career and she didn't. An awful lot of drivers get into NASCAR and right around 25th or worse, and they didn't get there because they weren't any good. You don't get there every once in a while you got dab with money. That happens every once in a while, but for the most part,
more often.
And, you know, if you get to the NASCAR level, you've won some races somewhere else, and some guys just don't make it happen. Now, it is true, she was in some great equipment.
Yeah,
she was in some great equipment and didn't make it happen. So that's on her too. But I've seen that happen to. Plenty of dudes who come into NASCAR. Yeah. It's not the first time.
Yeah, we shouldn't single her out. Based
she's not
on,
the best, yeah. obviously, but she's not the worst either.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assumption. So on to the next one here. So someone who isn't, she's not old, okay? She's only in her mid-30s, but out as far as drivers moving on, out with the old, okay? And in with the new, we've seen such an influx of younger drivers here in recent years. In fact, someone I think on like NASCAR Reddit or something listed all the full-time or suspected to be full-time drivers. And the median age is 30.
Yeah.
The median age. All right, the average age I think is younger, but the median age is 30. And Jimmy Johnson is the elder statesman at like 42, 43 years old. Harvick's right up there with him. And Kyle Busch, the probably the shot heard around the world from the media tour was Kyle Busch, when asked, complaining about NASCAR spending so much energy promoting the younger drivers. The Xfinity Series names are made here, and you've learned about them. They come into Cup. It's all about Blaney and what's Bubba Wallace going to do, and Chase Elliott, Eric Jones, Suarez, yada, yada. And so when asked about it, he said, and I want to read the quote exactly, all right? He said, and I quote, all you're doing is advertising all these younger guys for fans to figure out and pick up on and choose as their favorite driver. I think it's stupid. I don't know. I'm not the marketing genius that's behind this deal. So just do what I do, and my part is what my part is.
Right.
And he went on to say that he thought that the younger drivers, because they were younger, NASCAR could bully them into doing more appearances. So that's not the word, but that's the implication. And so, Dan, I'll pitch to you as a guy who has marketed Gresham Motorsports Park, a guy that's worked in racing for a long time. What do you think about 32-year-old Kyle Busch's notion that it is unfair, I guess, for market younger drivers so much instead of the guys like him?
Well, you know, this is one of those things where any answer you give is probably going to be the wrong answer or all the answers are going to be the right answer. But, you know, we talked about it last year. We touched on the fact that the emphasis is going away. And I don't know if NASCAR is pointing it in this direction, or if the sport is just gravitating to that direction, Doug, because you look at it and you look at all the young people coming in, and it could be a deal to where the owners have something to do with this also, because they're the ones that's putting these drivers in the cars. But as we said last year, the fact of the matter is the veterans cost you a ton of money, and the ones that come in, the young kids that are coming in, are bringing money.
Right.
And I think on any level, you follow the money trail, and you'll see what it's all about. But I can see his point of view on some of that, because it doesn't take long in any sport to be forgotten about.
Yeah.
And whenever you're a veteran, much like the other drivers that we talked about last year also, that are at what we consider, or what the sport considers, retirement age, and definitely not retirement age for sure, but even Kenseth, drivers like that have come through, really paid their dues. You know, it really is sad to see what is changing and how it's changing, but I really don't know what a person's going to do about it, you know?
Yeah, I think I get his point, and I think he's probably right in the sense that I don't know how successful it's going to actually push the sport, to push a lot of people that people don't know. But on the other side of it, you know, one of the things, we should talk about this, Jimmy Johnson is one of the greatest race car drivers we've ever seen. There's no doubt about that. And he has won, what is he, he's up to seven? Is he tied?
Seven championships,
So he's tied Petty and Earnhardt.
He's at the top four or five
and
wins.
And nobody in the country knows who he is.
I just don't understand.
This is one of the premier athletes in the world, and some of it has to be on him. I mean, he's a good guy. He's a nice guy, but he's not saying anything in interviews that interest people. He's not, you know, people used to, when Dale Jr. was younger, I mean, you'd hear stories and he's out on his farm and people are shooting guns and whatever. And there was
like MTV Cribs.
There was something going on there. But Jimmy Johnson, although one of the best drivers of all time, no doubt, has not elevated the sport with his story. He is, you know, you think of these tennis players that win for 8 or 10 years. They become household names to people who never watch tennis. And Jimmy Johnson didn't do that. And so on one hand, you've got one of the greatest drivers of all time, who's a veteran, that can't seem to get any interest on the national stage.
But if Jimmy Johnson divorced and started going with Danica, that would be...
There you go.
And Aaron didn't know about it.
I guess he didn't challenge...
But it is. It's gotten to be what you said. It's pop culture.
Right. But I mean...
And it's got to be newsworthy. But NASCAR has also neutered a lot of the drivers to the fact that they can't talk about anything without being... what's the word here? If you
slap
get
the wrist.
over passionate about something, you get pushed back. Yeah. So I guess a lot of the drivers have learned, you know, you have to be careful what you say, and it's gotten to the point now that they just don't say a whole lot of anything.
When Tony Stewart won his championship, especially the first couple, he was known the next year that he would challenge NASCAR, he would challenge the authorities, he'd complain about things, and that would make news because the champion is challenging the people who run the sport. And it creates, look, all the essence of drama is conflict. If you don't have conflict, you don't have a story. And so I think, I've talked about this before, there's too many good guys in the sport. Now, good guys are needed. White hats are needed, but black hats are needed too. And it's the confrontation between the two. So maybe what they should be trying is a confrontation between the veterans and these young guys. Maybe that's the story they should be pushing.
What I'm going to do for 2018 is I'm going to say that this is I'm going to consider this the birth year of N1, because I think NASCAR 1 is going to be aligning itself much in how it markets itself as F1.
Oh, really?
Because I think that NASCAR wants to be able to say at the end of the deal, I've read a lot about F1 over the off season, and the fact that the teams are worth so much money, the charters, the franchises, whatever you want to call it. And I think to bring it to that level is definitely because I've tried to figure out for a long time why they're going in the direction that they're going in. And as I said last year, they must be happy with it because they're not changing anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start the season with N1, and N1 is alive and well.
See, and what's interesting, the one thing that Formula One has that no other motorsport really does is a worldwide. They go all over the world.
Right.
And so that's naturally going to be more money. If you make it to F1, you could be the 20th place F1 driver. That's like
yeah,
being,
but Doug,
you
can do the same thing in the continental U.S. because you're the only game and the biggest game in town.
Yeah, and
so
it used
could,
to be.
You
yeah.
could definitely control this continent right here. You can control that to the nth degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of the races are too close to each other in regions, especially the Southeast. So it's easy to – that's why a lot of the – you can go to one race or you can go to another race. The one thing about Formula One, if you're in China and you want to see a Formula One race, there's one race a year. So you got to go to that mm-hmm. race.
Right.
So you don't really have options. But
or you can watch it on TV.
Or you can watch it on TV,
yeah,
exactly.
And there's a very – you know, to play into what you've said on this podcast before, Eric, about the schedule – Formula One's got like 20 races a year,
yeah,
or something
races.
Like that.
I still think, and I'll beat that drum again. I think that we should start when we start, and I think the thing should be over maybe a month into the NFL season. I'll be honest with you, it's too long.
So you're going to go adopt the Bowman Gray schedule as far as races, because Bowman Gray pretty much that's. And they've done extremely well there,
yeah.
And it's one of those anomalies that just keeps going on, kind of like Snowball Derby. It
right.
just keeps going on and on, life of its own.
Yeah, and it's, you know, anything is, the rarer something is, the more precious it is. The more you have of something, mm-hmm. the less precious it is. And there's just two, what is it? There's 36 points races, right?
Yes.
Then you add the All-Star race,
the
Clash. So you end up with 38 races. And I'll be honest with you, I think the All-Star race is absolute. There's no the All-Stars are at every race.
Yeah.
Every race you go to, the All-Stars
are.
It's not
race.
Like other sports where there's
and
a whole bunch
the
of teams.
And it's the same track every year, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that's a waste of time.
I think they ought to do the All-Star race where the driver pits his own car.
Well, something like, you know, the All-Star race is like NFL deals with this with the Pro Bowl. Isn't the Pro Bowl this weekend? Nobody cares.
Yeah, it's
you
in
know?
Honolulu.
And they try to like make it better with, oh, they're going to play dodgeball. I still don't care.
Yeah,
I'm not
they
watching
did the dodgeball
it.
Thing last night.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't care. I'm more interested in the All-Star weekend, actually. I like the pit crew challenge more than the actual race.
And they don't make as big a deal out of that.
Yeah.
Anymore. They wrap the pit stops into the qualifying. I don't mm-hmm. think the pit crew challenge is even a thing actually.
Yeah.
Anymore. So
it should be 26 races.
Yeah. That's
after 20, you'd be. I would 20, and then you're into the chase. However you want to do it.
All
18
I can
in the
say
chase.
Is N1.
N1.
There you are. Well, so on another thing, since we're talking about the direction of the sport, the younger drivers seem to, and we'll go into our third subject here, five to go. The younger drivers seem to be very reachable in social media and seemed to agree to a lot more stuff. And so when Kyle Busch spoke out, of course, there was this natural reaction. Bubba Wallace called his reports or called his complaint dumb, stupid, I think some other words mm-hmm. used. And Ryan Blaney said, look, I could just go home and sit on the couch in all my free time, but I agree to this stuff because I care about the future of the
sure.
sport. Even Brad Keselowski at 33 years old kind of said the same thing, that I understand the veteran drivers feel like the sport is maybe damaged beyond where they know how they could even fix it. And he even said that some of the stuff that the drivers do now is maybe pointless into helping the sport now, but you don't know what seeds you're planting for later.
Well, that's true.
And so, I mean, so Eric, what do you think? Is younger drivers being involved as they do on social media integral to the success? Are the problems too big for that to even push it?
I
don't know.
I think that it's probably a good thing. You want to keep up with the media and what the media is of the day. But I think sometimes the problem with older people, such as ourselves and the people who run NASCAR, when you think
thank
about
you. Thank you, Eric.
trying to tap into youth culture is we don't really understand it. We don't know why. A video goes viral.
Yeah.
You can't make a video go viral. You can't. So obviously the younger drivers are good for that. Let me tell you what you should promote and the stories that you should tell. Winners.
Uh-huh.
Winners.
Uh-huh.
People who win races. Because people who win races keep a fan base. People might think a driver's cute, and that's why they like him at first. Or they might see one race where they do something really special. But if the driver then doesn't place in the top five for the next 10 races, that fan base is going to drop off. Whoever is winning or whoever's placing in the top five consistently, those are the drivers that the sport should rally around and tell their stories, because if you're going to bring in new people, guess what? They don't want to become their favorite driver to drive around in 15th place all the time. They want to be with a winner.
Dan, how hard was it or easy when you were running Gresham Motorsports part to get drivers to be involved in the things you wanted to do extracurricular besides the track? And then my second question to you, Dan, is what were these obligations like for Bill and for you and Ernie when y'all were running the race team?
All right, let's go to Gresham and what you're trying to do with all the drivers and all the different people. Okay, so you would try to put something together and everybody went their own direction. That's the thing about social media that people don't understand, is everybody can take their own little program and go in any direction they want to go in at any time.
Yeah.
They don't have to do anything. They don't have to follow anything. It's kind of like texting instead of phoning. You know, you can answer it or not. You can talk to who you want to talk to, and the heck with everybody else. So you ended up with, if you had 30 different drivers and you were trying to get together and have a driver autograph session or something for the track, well, they just did one of their own. They took it and did what they wanted to do with it.
That's interesting.
Okay,
yeah.
So there's the deal, because I was thinking the other night, the most news that I've heard out of any driver over the off season is Danica. And it wasn't for the racing, it was for who she was dating.
Yeah.
So go back to what Eric said in the pop culture deal. I think the young drivers are all going in their own different direction, and I think they're all trying to put as much stuff on there. Whether they do it or not, they are trying to show that they are multicultural. They go everywhere, they do everything, and everybody's wishing they were them.
Yeah, they're rock stars in their own exactly. little way. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly. I think the accessibility is certainly just having it there through social media. The drivers that are really good with it, I think of Blaney and Bubba Wallace is number one. They're fantastic. I think Keselowski
was the one that
he
really
kind of started it.
Yeah, when he had his phone in the car in the 2012 Daytona 500. I think that really
that's it. You're texting from the car. You're doing it, blog, whatever you're doing. You're doing it all from the car as it's all going on real time, and that's what drew the people.
The tweet that made NASCAR then decide, hey, you can't have your phones in the car or whatever, was when he took the picture of the jet dryer when they were under the red flag, and the jet dryer that Montoya just ran into and exploded. He said, hey, look at this.
Yeah.
And then they're like, wait, what?
What's wrong with this? Why do you want to stop that when you've got the kids you're trying to promote, and that's their culture, that's what they do, that's how they get their following, is by doing this.
That's
so what's wrong with
that? That's exactly what I'm talking about, where you have people at the top of the sport who don't understand it. They want to use it.
No.
They don't understand it. Fires, why do you think every local news team has a helicopter? Because when a fire, there's a fire, they can put it on local news and people stop and watch. So you got to tell somebody.
Yeah, but even if they helicopter, look at where most of the news comes from. It now comes from your cell phone.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Everybody is a reporter now. Mm-hmm. It's not just reporters out and about. They cover the main stories that most people don't have access to. But most of the news now comes from your cell phone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and if one of these young drivers jumps up and wins three or four races, you know, if Eric Jones, if Chase jumps up and wins three or four races, the story will begin to become obvious and it'll start telling itself. And then NASCAR will just have to get behind it and give it a little bit of a boost.
Yeah, and so look, I think NASCAR, they switched their campaign, and this is what they said themselves. They switched their campaign from in the past being just about the commercials being really just about the on-track confrontations to making it about stars.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. Kyle Busch, NASCAR even said when he was a young driver, they didn't do enough to market him as the young next big thing. But the reason why is he was so much younger. The guys that were just coming into their own, Johnson, Harvick, Stewart, you had this huge crop that was just they were the younger drivers, really, and Busch was just so much younger and only a couple of years behind. And then right after Busch, you had this really robust 2006 rookie class: Truex, Hamlin, Bowyer, Sorensen was in that. David Strimmy was in that. You know, you go down the list, even ones that are not in the sport anymore. That was a huge 2006. And so now you've had this drought from 06. You've had a few, really not much of rookie classes at all. Yeah. And then you get into these last couple of years.
There are only so many rides. You can't have a whole crop of new young kids every year. There's only 38 rides.
Here's another reason I think Kyle Busch is upset. So here's some things. Number one, he loses the championship to a driver that's driving his equipment that's not on his team, that they're helping, and they run circles around him. And it's Truex. And Truex, I'm sorry, is not mentioned in the same sentence with Kyle, but maybe now a little bit. But he's Busch is a virtuoso. So he's got that chip on his shoulder. Then he's not getting marketed like the younger drivers. And here's two other things he complained about, by the way, on the media tour. And the Truck Series, his team has been throttling the competition. Well, in the Truck Series, they have a spec engine now.
Oh.
And he's like, look, Toyota, they have brand identity from the body and from the motor, and now you're messing with the motor.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another one. This is a little wrinkle. Austin Dillon just blurted this out in his media availability this week, that the data that they were able to share from the electronic fuel injection, the EFI, the throttle tracing and different telemetry that was available just within the teams is now being made available to everybody. It's going into it because teams were finding backdoors into the NASCAR computer system and looking at everybody's data. And Kyle Busch is like, I barely even want my teammates to see my data. And now Ryan Truex can look at it, or whoever, or somebody can. And so that's.
Well, let me just say, I'm glad that Kyle Busch is complaining because, like I said, I think that makes news.
He needs the black hat.
So people can, I like the story. Kyle Busch, I'll go out there and show these kids how it's done. That should be the story that's out there. And the young kids that are coming in trying to compete. But now when you say all of this sharing of stuff and all that, are they trying to address what we talked about a lot last year, which is how much it cost
entry into the sport? Apparently, for what it was implied is that teams are spending money to find backdoor ways to get that information. And so they're like, look, if Gibbs has all that info, the secrecy is gone.
We can't stop this.
We can't stop that. So we're just going to make sure that Matt DiBenedetto and Go Fast Racing is going to have it too. Right. And NASCAR's argument is, well, it was already available to the fans that have RaceView. Well, RaceView, it was not as raw the day. I mean, there's still some errors in that data. So, okay, two more subjects I got to hit. Eric, I know you got to go in a few minutes here. I want to talk real quickly about just maybe one or two things each of you, Dan and Eric. And we're here with Dan Elliott, Eric Von Hessler, and I'm Doug Turnbull on the 5 to Go podcast. Dan Elliott, what's maybe something you hope to see in 2018? Because it's so easy to, for 10, 11 years, people have just been whopping the sport with a baseball bat. What's something you hope to see, an expectation you have for this race season?
You know, I'm so frustrated about what I've seen already as far as 2018. That just surprised me. Heck fire. I'm not asking for anything anymore. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the ride this year and see where it goes to. But
I think there are going to be some surprises this year. My prediction is we will be surprised by the emergence of something or someone. Absolutely.
Every time I say I won't be surprised, I get surprised. So every time we go to Daytona, I thought in all the years past that we go to Daytona and all the things that come out of Daytona, because they've never ceased to amaze me on putting something together that comes out of Daytona that was a big surprise. As you talked about, it's always been something every year. But do you think we'll see any more changes in the point system this year?
No.
Are there going to be something that comes along that makes 2018 another different year? And I say yes. I say there's a lot of things coming because the sport still continues to evolve, and as I said earlier, N1 is alive and well.
I'll tell you the things that I look for. Obviously, going into Daytona, I'm always interested to find out which team will be caught cheating and get in trouble. It seems to happen almost every year. Anyway,
the Fords have a chip on their shoulder, by the way, because they felt like they were getting outrun by Toyota, and Chevrolet is going to have a new Camaro down there.
They got outrun by everything.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And so the Fords, I think, they were complaining a lot from Keselowski, some from Logano, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what the Fords cook up for Daytona Beach.
I I'm interested in Hendrick. I want to, you know, I'm interested in Chase, obviously. I want to see if this is the year. He's
seven runners up,
right? And you know, it's interesting. Last year, I felt like even though Jimmy Johnson jumped up and won three races last year, right?
Before the midway point of the season.
Outside of that, I felt like Chase's program was the stronger program, and Hendrick
undoubtedly.
So it'll be interesting to me to see if he jumps up and wins some races.
Eric, I believe that your if is like, golly, Pete, would you bet against it this year?
I wouldn't bet against it. No.
After what happened with Hamlin, he's going to be driving like a bat out of hell.
Knowing what I know from last year, and there's no way that you'd ever bet against that program for this year at all. And to me, that'll be no surprise at all.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But what I would like to see is not only Chase win a few races, I'd like one of the other ones, whether it's Eric Jones or one of these, I'd like somebody else to win a couple of races. And if we're going to have this young driver thing, I don't want just one. I want to see two or three of them do pretty well so we can get down to the end of the season and let's find out who are frenemies here. Who's, you know, and it'd be great if it was Chase winning races, Eric Jones winning some races, a veteran jumps up and wins some races. That's what I'd like to see. Not just one of these young drivers do it, but a couple of them break out.
Yeah, Ryan Blaney's going to be a Penske this year. Yeah,
exactly. So I don't know what we're going to see. What I would want to see is if we have this crop of young drivers, not only just one of them jump out and do something, but a couple of them so that we can get a good old-fashioned rivalry going.
And the two rookies of the year that'll be full-time running for rookie of the year are Bubba Wallace of the 43 mm-hmm. and William Byron, who will be in the 24 because Chase Elliott will be in the nine livery this year with the same 24 team, but would be the nine car. What was the five team will become
the same sponsor?
The nine. Chase, yeah, he'll have Napa and right. Hooters and so forth, and William Byron will have Exalta and Liberty University and so forth.
Doug, did you hear any much about them talking about the five crew members over the wall instead of seven? There's been some talk about the number of people.
Yeah, so there will be five crew members going over the wall instead of six. Remember, the teams are going to have very limited rosters coming to the track. So what it's going to mean is you won't have two tire carriers.
Okay,
they're going to have to mix up who carries that other tire and get it around.
Is that going to make for longer pit
yes,
stops?
It's going to make.
Are we going to go back to 14 or something or 13?
Here's the prediction though. Probably, you know, by the end of the season, they're going to figure it out, how to have it within a second of what they have. But I don't think you're going to be seeing those 11.3 stops anymore.
Is that another cost saving move?
I think we have to applaud that.
We take less people to the track
and less people behind the scenes at the racetrack too. The rosters you have to submit a roster to NASCAR.
Do you want to hear a cost saving move?
What's that?
Take away one airplane from each team.
Yeah. And melt it down and make it into race cars.
There you go. Just take away. Just tell them to park the airplane. You can only take one airplane to each race.
Not a bad idea.
That would be a cost-saving move.
Well, you could argue in the long run, flying commercial over all that time would add up, I guess. But that is a great point.
About get their butt in the truck and go ride.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, so real quickly here before we go, I know Eric has to go in a moment. I want to reflect that since our very last podcast in late November last year, right after the end of the season, we've lost Bud Moore, the Hall of Fame NASCAR owner, Robert Yates died in October.
We talked about
Robert Yates. We hadn't talked about Bud Moore, who's a Ford driver. Dan, I want to talk to you real quick about knowing Bud Moore. I'm sure being a Blue Oval, there was some time spent together in the garage.
You know, that was one of the toughest men. He was on the beach at Normandy, wasn't he?
Yes.
You know, I never, from being around him in the early years and not knowing him as well as I did, as I aged through the sport, I did not realize how tough that man was. But, you know, it goes back to all of the people that came through NASCAR in the early years and how tough they are.
Right. Our first champion, Red Byron, had leg shrapnel, you know, his leg. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And it's just unbelievable to me, the stories. And these just ended up being on a daily basis. They were just another one of the guys, never did anything exceptional in their lives. And every one of them have a story to tell that is very exceptional.
Yeah, I just say just giant of the sport. I miss I miss those drivers. I miss those owners. I miss those programs.
He's always independent. Yeah. He didn't have four car team or anything like.
But
was,
I just mean like Dan's talking about just the grit, just the types of guys and thinkers too. You know, not just tough, mm-hmm. not just physically tough,
brilliant.
But guys who are clever and could improvise on the spot.
He did that in the war. It came up with a way to shoot more out of his gun or something along those lines, make his gun more automatic than it was, and he also managed to finesse his way into rounding up a whole house. Yeah. He negotiated the surrender of a house, a bunch of Nazis instead of having them around to kill
people.
Well,
a lot of guys, let's face it, people, they came home from war, they were a little bit bored with a mundane everyday. That's how we get the excitement of racing.
Yeah.
You know, these guys had, you know, they had lived adrenaline rushes in their lives, and just coming back and working at the corner store wasn't getting it done, you know? And so that's a lot of these guys who began NASCAR are just, you know, heroes in other elements of their lives long before we ever heard of them. And I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to him and that entire generation for creating a sport that, I mean, I was born in 1964. I didn't start going to short tracks until 1970, 71, 72. But those are the types of guys that were in the, you know, you used to be able to walk all over the infield and after the race was over and before the race. And those were the guys. They were just blood, sweat, and tears, man. You know, a lot of dirt on the face. I've said it before. That's what NASCAR is missing right now. They're not enough. Those guys get out of the cars, they take off their helmets, they look like supermodels.
Yeah, they do. And even the mechanics do in a way.
Yeah.
So, but rest in peace, Bud Moore. Over 60 wins as a car owner. He won a title as a crew chief for Buck Baker in 57, two titles with Joe Weatherly as his driver before, and then Weatherly got killed tragically out in, I think it was Riverside, California, in a wreck there in the mid-60s. And he also won the 78 Daytona 500 for Bobby Allison. And yes, I did just read all that right before we go on. I don't just have all that memorized.
No, you're a genius.
sure. Another passing, too, and this is less of the NASCAR ranks, but what he did in very brief glimpses in NASCAR is incredible. Dan Gurney, who drove for the Wood Brothers and won a lot out in Riverside, California. Dan, did you ever meet Dan Gurney at all, did those ships never cross in the night?
Met Dan Gurney, and what a road course driver he was. Golly, Pete, he was good.
And he was insistent on being an independent driver, driving his own car. He had his own, and I don't know what it was called. He had his own chassis that he built for Formula One and an Indy car, what it was called back then. Mm-hmm. That it probably cost him wins, but he was so insistent on being on his own. That's another sort of toast to him in a way.
You know, these guys, we've kind of lost that now because NASCAR drivers are all uniformly, as they come into the sport, are pretty decent road racers now. But the days of the ringers that used to come in and just do the, and you would see flashes of these great drivers from other series that would come in, and we lose that now. I mean, I guess the last one was Boris Said, kind of.
Yeah, Ron Fellows.
Yeah, it was still
going
on.
They still
happened
to the Xfinity and Truck Series.
Yeah, it was still going on in NASCAR pretty recently, right up through the kind of late 90s, early 2000s. Somewhere around 2004, 2005, Tony Stewart and Jeff Gordon just started leading the way, like, you know, no, we can race on these things.
Yeah.
And then the new drivers coming in saw it as that's part of the sport, and I've got to know how to race on those tracks.
Well, there was no racing middle class. And so with those teams, what you'd see is Boris Said and Ron Fellows come to these kind of middle teams where they weren't as invested in the drive. You know, they weren't going to win the points, and they didn't have the sponsor.
But they could place well in one race.
They could place well in one race.
Well, my friend Andy Lally, who I want to give a shout out, he'll be driving this weekend. The Daytona 24 is this weekend, right? He'll be driving this weekend, so good luck to him. But he's done it a couple years in a row in the Xfinity Series, taking a car that, you know, didn't place above 25.
The SS Greenlight number 07 and almost winning.
So you're right. You still do see it in the lower series.
Yeah, and they race more. The Xfinity and truck race three road courses a year. So and one extra road course will be added to the NASCAR schedule.
Oh,
we're
goodness.
Not going to discuss it, but the Charlotte Roval, which they have taken a few turns out of to make it a little bit faster lap, 2.28 miles at Charlotte Motor Speedway, September the 30th. And so that'll
Is it
be
all flat?
No.
Have they put hills in and stuff?
No, there's a 30-foot elevation change.
Okay.
So, it's going to be interesting, and they have video online. You also check it out. PRM will have that broadcast, by the way, and I'll get to be part of that team in the turns. Well,
awesome.
Eric, I know you got a call. You got to jump on here. And Dan, I know you're busy working in your shop up there in Dawsonville, but we're dropped the green flag for five to go, and we're going to try to get on weekly for you here through as much as we can in the NASCAR season. So any parting shots,
fellas? I just wish they'd have run that Roval through the grandstand.
Imagine that. They come down the tunnel.
Yeah, have a tunnel. That's great. Like Monte Carlo.
They could do the back straightaway real easy and go up where the seats used to be up on above the track, so the Roval could go outside of the track. I think that'd be sweet.
Any parting words for me is I'm happy. I'm ready for more racing, and I just hope they deliver. I want to see good, hard racing from great racers, and I don't know a lot of these young guys. I don't know William Byron. I'm hoping that these people put on a hell of a show, because don't forget, at the end of the day, you have your favorite driver, people you don't like. It's a show.
Yep.
I don't have a favorite driver. I'm in love with race weekend. I love a great race. I love pre-race. I love when the things, start the engines. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
And then with 5 or 10 left, if there's a couple of guys that are in the mix, maybe I'll say, hey, I want this guy to win. I love great racing, and that's what I'm looking forward to. Hopefully, I thought a little bit of last year was a little bit of a dud. I'm hoping this year will be more exciting. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tweet a whole lot more in 2018.
That's good. I'd love to see you on social media more, Dan.
I'm going to tweet a lot more in 2018.
Do it, buddy. Right. Do it. We'll tweet a link to this podcast. Folks, like us on Facebook. We have a Facebook group, Five to Go. We put the link up each week here. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. And Eric Von Hessler, while they're subscribed to this on iTunes, they might as well go ahead and jump over to the Von Hessler Doctrine.
The Von Hessler Doctrine.
400,000 downloads now?
A month. The Von Hessler Doctrine, known as the fastest-growing radio show in America.
Oh.
So you might as well jump on.
Fantastic.
Don't be left behind.
Do that. Yeah, listen, it's catching fire here in Atlanta. Congratulations, Eric, by the way. It was exactly a year ago, like mid-January of last year, when you started having the weekday show instead of the weekend show. And and then just in September or October, whatever, you moved up into the 9 to 11 slot.
I'm 53 years old, and this is the best job I've ever had. I can't believe it took so long, but I couldn't be happier.
I love it. It's an honor to have you here. Same to you, Dan, as well, with all the experience and knowledge you bring. It's good to work with you again after being up with you at Gresham a few years ago. Well, folks, thanks so much for joining our first episode of 2018. I'm Doug Turnbull. He's Eric Von Hessler. The other he is Dan Elliott, and we will talk to you soon.